This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Vonsland. Your scientists were so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. That and more after a word from our sponsor, Napa Auto Tech Training. So, are you looking for the right training provider that offers cutting-edge courses to hone your automotive skills? Well, let Napa Auto Tech take you to the next level. Go to NapaAutoTech.com for more details about classes near you. Yeah, that's right. I just quoted Jurassic Park. Why? A few years ago, a friend of mine, Matt Skundrich, jokingly told me I should record an episode relating Jurassic Park to our profession, this industry. And I kind of thought about it a little bit, but I've been thinking about it some more. Granted, the new Jurassic World movie is out. I have not seen it yet, but I've heard really good things. I guess the relating it part could come off super convoluted, but I don't think so. I think we should have been paying attention. Granted, if you ask me, I probably would say we need to pay attention to a lot of things. And what we consume for entertainment is just one. And of course, for the purposes of this episode, that's going to be the focus. And I'm sure everybody knows the story of Jurassic Park, where we have figured out how to create dinosaurs by finding the blood encased in amber, or basically, I should elaborate on that, is prehistoric mosquitoes preserved, encased in amber. And because we have access to that, we have access to at least part of their DNA strains. Now we have the technology to decode it. Unfortunately, due to the extreme time lapse that went by, the DNA strands are incomplete. So scientists figure out how to kind of paste in some code to produce dinosaurs, and then things go sideways. How on earth does that relate to us? And I don't think it has much to do with the dinosaurs themselves, obviously. I think it's the kind of a subplot. I guess this gets a little dicey in most of us have watched the movies, right? I don't know how many of us have read the novels. And there's two of them. Of course, Jurassic Park and then Lost World, written by Michael Crichton. This, a strong subplot in the novels, more so than even in the movies, is chaos. And Jeff Goldblum plays Ian Black, a chaotician, in the first movie, and I guess in the second, where he has a more prominent role. But in the novels, he is very prominent. He's kind of, I guess you would say, a main character. Not so much in the movies, except for the second one, of course. That's what I think is some of the stuff to pay attention to. Now, I think one misconception many have with chaos theory is that they think it's like the study of extremely complex systems or random disorder. That would be probably the textbook misconception about chaos theory. It is the study of complex systems. That's no doubt about that. But it's really about early stages of a system coming into existence or being formed. Again, I suppose if we're going to start using like textbook type terms, we're going to start saying like initial conditions, small, seemingly inconsequential, seemingly trivial things can lead to unpredictable behaviors. And I don't mean unpredictable in that they just jump around every which way and they're so chaotic. It's things happen that you didn't expect. To me, one of the best ways to think about this is the weather. We can predict the weather. They could predict the weather with 100% accuracy. However, think about all the information they would need to know. A term used in chaos theory, of course, is the butterfly effect. Many of us, I think, kind of know what that is. So we know what that means. And there's a movie starring Ashton Kutcher that also named The Butterfly Effect, which I guess it kind of plays on that idea of making certain changes or doing certain things in certain areas creates a much different result. And we also saw that in Back to the Future Part 2, right? Marty goes back in time, changes something, or not even he so much, right? Biff, boom, got big problems. And we get a much different future. Pretty unpredictable future. I think that might be a source of, or not even a source, but a really good place for us to spend time contemplating is the initial conditions. And I think then we can start maybe pushing the envelope of what's really part of chaos theory and what's really in the spirit of this discussion. What were the initial conditions of your business? What are the initial conditions of your career? What are the initial conditions of even really just a new direction that you want to take within the profession or within your career or life in general? How do you put yourself in the best position possible to succeed, to get more of a predictable conclusion? So again, the butterfly effect, just to kind of tie that up, I kind of mentioned it and then veered off a little bit. Big surprise. The reference usually made is, again, to the weather. A butterfly flaps its wings in anywhere on the planet. We'll just say like Beijing, and it's sunny instead of rainy in New York City. That's the type of reference that's making. A small change in initial conditions for whatever the weather is going to be drastically changed by a seemingly trivial and or seemingly non-contributing factor has a profound effect. I think we all can take a lot from that. I think we can all think about that. And it isn't just us. It isn't just our businesses. It could be our kids, our families, our friends, friendships. It's not just localized, but to think about the little things start to matter. Of course, the big things matter, but the little things matter too. Paying attention to details or being aware of the details. And awareness could be a whole different episode on awareness. A lot of times we think we have awareness, myself included. Many times I've thought I've had a lot of awareness and end up learning really, really fast. Wildly unaware. The gift and or curse of awareness teamed with a little bit of hindsight is a painful, painful, painful thing. Sometimes it's a good thing, right? Sometimes we fail up, and it's worth noting and paying attention to the small things.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build a Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Autotech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training.
In reference to Jurassic Park, we have a lot of things in play here with what ends up happening. Like one, it's a miracle, granted, fictitious so far, as we know, but it's a miracle that they've used technology to basically write the code to dinosaurs and fill in the gaps that were deteriorated and missing due to time. They substitute frog DNA. That happens in the book, that happens in the movies, and it wasn't well thought out. Or at least, maybe they could not have known that one of the things that might carry over from the frog DNA is kind of an asexual trait, where certain reptiles, or amphibians in this case, have the ability to change their sex, if you will, so that they can continue to breed. And one of the contingencies in Jurassic Park to keep things under control was there's no unauthorized breeding in Jurassic Park. Why? Because they're all female. Well, turns out that didn't work so good. That was one small thing. The other thing is just there's a character named Nedry who was hired for the lowest amount of money, right? He had the lowest bid to write all the computer code for Jurassic Park to run. That means all the security systems, the life support systems, you name it. Everything's computerized so it can be run from a kind of a command center. Nedry is a nefarious character, devious. He is working with a competitor to steal samples, to steal eggs, if you will, and allow a competitor an advantage to start competing with Jurassic Park. His actions to leave the island with the specimens leads to chaos. And I don't mean that to be a pun. I'm not trying to be punny here. But because of that, he's set things in motion now. The security systems drop. Dinosaurs are starting to kind of escape their pens. And turns out the really, really dangerous ones are. The idea being there is, again, small things, seemingly small things lead to big results. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. Like in this case, it's bad, right? That's the whole point of the suspense of Jurassic Park. It does work the other way, right? You start doing a series of good things can happen. Or maybe a good example would be like your diet. You're trying to be healthier. But you start paying attention to what you're eating and maybe a food diary and eat clean, quote unquote clean. You're going to notice some benefits. It has to happen. Now, honestly, I know this kind of swings back to the negative, but many people have tried many different diets and they don't work or haven't worked or don't work long term. And the food diary obviously helps in this case, but what happens is you end up eating something that is not what you thought it was. It wasn't as healthy as you thought it was, and it undermines you. Again, decisions, unseen circumstances, unseen events, choices, not even that you didn't see that you were going to do them, but you didn't know enough about it, weren't aware to see what the repercussions were going to be. And the repercussions, again, sometimes we fail up where you accidentally make a decision or a choice that ends up working out really, really well for you, right? People win the lottery or hit the lottery ticket, you know, they buy a lottery ticket and they win money. That was a choice, low probability of victory, but you had to buy the ticket to win, right? Had to happen. You can't win without buying it. So yeah, I think the real thing with the Jurassic Park series, but namely the first movie, is we have to be aware of the details. We have to pay attention. We have to educate ourselves. And there's a scene to the movie, and this also takes place in the novel, where Ian Malcolm, the scientist, the chaotician, is lighting up the board that's going to decide to how Jurassic Park is going to work, and not just a board, but also some experts to maybe give it their stamp of approval and maybe become involved, and essentially calling out the scientists for standing on the shoulders of giants without studying the underlying theory. And this is something we see in our profession, I think, all the time. Front of house, back of house, everywhere. I know I've made many comments about this, where it seems like there's some sort of misunderstanding, some sort of logic that I think falls apart, where we think if we go try to learn the most difficult thing we can, if I go take this class that is obviously way over my head on, we'll just pick on using oscilloscopes, lab scopes, jumping right into it, and yet I don't really have a good grasp on just fundamental electricity and electronics. If I have no base fundamental idea of how this stuff works, that scope class gets really tough to keep up with. It's like we have this misconception that if I go learn how to do this really, really high end stuff, this really, really advanced stuff, I will somehow immediately understand all the fundamentals. And I noticed, like, I say fundamentals rather than basic. They are not the same thing. Basic and fundamental are not the same thing. Basic implies easy. I think people use fundamental the same way they would use basic, but it's not the same. Fundamental has nothing to do with easy. Fundamental might be baseline. It might be the foundation to which your knowledge or whatever needs to be resting on. It's not necessarily easy, right? I mean, if we want to study like the fundamental forces of nature, well, there you go. Already, it just got really complicated. Or strong and weak nuclear force, electromagnetic force, and then, I don't know, gravity might not really fit, but we'll put gravity in there just for the sake of discussion. Really? The electromagnetic force, that's something easy? No, it ain't. I mean, that's quantum electrodynamics. It's quantum field theory. What's simple about that? Fundamental just means it's the foundation. If I don't have the foundation, I have really no business and more of the advanced stuff. It doesn't work backwards. And what you find out is the more fundamentals you have a good grasp of, the less advanced the advanced stuff seems. You just see, it's easier to see how it exists or how people got there, how they came up with the idea or the test or the, you know, how they were looking at the data to make this what was seemingly a creative leap. So yeah, fundamental is not easy. And yeah, we watched in these movies or read in the novel, and I would strongly suggest if you like reading, check those novels out, that you're skipping over the basics, really. Maybe another reference I think used in the novel, if I recall correctly, the martial arts, right? You can go and learn a lot of techniques that against somebody not educated in the fundamentals of fighting science makes you very dangerous. You can dish out a lot of damage. But you didn't take the time, you didn't go through the hoops and you just didn't take the path to get to the point where you have this knowledge. And because of all the time, because of, you know, either the earning of belts or however that works, the progress, by the time you have mastered the techniques, you also have mastered yourself. You've also mastered the ability to walk away. Like, you don't have the ego anymore. And I think that's what Jurassic Park does a really good job of showing us without showing us, that there is something to the journey to knowledge. There is something to the journey of enlightenment and going through that process, because you also learn and earn respect. You learn to respect the systems. You learn to respect others because of it, because you've been there, done that, you've gone through the struggle, and you also learn to appreciate the little things. So yeah, I mean, I think I've just started to talk myself into reading that novel again. Thanks a lot, Scundy. Or watching the movies. Might have to have a watch along. Jeez. So yeah, I hope you got a kick out of that and see kind of what I'm thinking and where I'm going with that. I really, really appreciate everybody listening. Thank you again for the emails and the messages. Keep the questions coming in. I do like doing the mailbag episodes. I don't know if they're as good or fun to listen to. If they are, please let me know. If they're not, please let me know. You can email me at mattfonslapodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, I would like to thank the Aftermarket Radio Network for making this all possible. And I really would like to thank Napa Auto Tech Training for sponsoring. And until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.